helping people. Stop it.
Stop being helpful. Welcome to the Backpack Show, everybody. It's Tuesday, April 13th. The sky is cloudy here in Boston. 45 degrees, going up to 52. How about you, Carrie?
It's sunny here in Nashville, so I have no idea what the temperature is because no one who's not here will care.
But, no one cares.
61 degrees, partly cloudy. That's welcome right. to the Backpack Show, where we talk about the weather in places weather. You don't live.
Traffic out on Route 74 is a little light when you come around the Dixon Mason line.
I think it's Mason Dixon. You're like, what?
That's why I made the joke.
It is, though.
You're right. It is. It's Mason Dixon, right?
I mean, I may be a Yankee, but I know that much. Hey, look. Both your biological parents are here.
They're lovely.
To meet Jason Jordan, Nashville guitar sensation. He's been in the business a long time. He's been playing guitar since he was 6. He's played with like everybody. If you know them,
he finally got better.
He plays with. Shut up. He also has a sneaker side hustle. Like he buys and resells really cool kicks. So we'll talk about that. He has a fitness journey we can talk about. There's so many things. He's also my very long suffering guitar instructor, who would encourage me to practice like a lot more than I do.
Guitar, fitness, Nike. We're having a big day on the old Backpack Show, and maybe we'll even talk about toilets.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz, welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Hi, Leslie.
We have Leslie and Elizabeth is here. We have the whole gang here today.
So, Elizabeth, I've seen a couple comments from you about how you would like sausage, and I have got sausage coupons. Only one person has emailed kerry@chrisbrogan.com to ask for these free Johnsonville sausage coupons, and I sent them a butt ton. That's the scientific term, because I was like, I can't eat all this sausage. So email me.
Did you mention that they were free?
What, am I going to charge for sausage coupons?
Oh, Rob Hedges on the Twitches.
Hello. Well, I mean, whatever. Whatever, Rob.
All right. Hey, listen, before we talk to Jason Jordan, which is very important, we're in talks with a new sponsor, so we might have a new sponsor very shortly.
That's exciting.
Yep. But our current ones are, if you want to run a show like this, you just go to cbrogan.me/StreamYard. Kapow! Show. You just, you know, probably can't interview our guests.
Bring your own guitarist.
Mm-hmm. You want a .online domain like we have at the Backpack Show .online? Just go to cbrogan.me/online. You can get your own domain for $1 for the first year.
Too late for yourmomis.online. It's the first one I checked. But yourmomspicks.online was available when I looked.
So are you a loser? Do you have a podcast like everybody else? you can host your stupid podcast that no one wants to listen to on castos.com.
Oh my gosh, stop.
It's a really good hosting platform. It is the nuts. There you go. That's all their sponsors.
A horrible thing to say about a platform, by the way.
Podcast, it's the nuts. Hey, Charlie. So Jason Jordan is a complete stranger we found in a phone book. It said something about likes guitars. Or is your pal and you're long-suffering, as you pointed out.
I realized I was in Nashville and that I needed to play guitar. Like I've always thought about it. And my employer, marketing profs, was like, hey, everybody should learn something new. And I was like, cool. And Christopher Penn, our mutual friend, said, you should learn to code because coding is really valuable. And I was like, no. And so I started taking guitar lessons on Halloween of 2018, I think I started. And I was in costume already for Halloween as Harley Quinn. And I'm sure he was so polite, too. I'm sure he was like, oh, God, what is this? He was very nice. And he's taking great care of me. And he plays like, it's insane how well he plays.
Well, so that's the thing is, you know, when he's not, you know, suffering for his sins and doing penance by teaching you guitar, he plays out at clubs and things like that.
I have asked him that. I was like, it's got to be painful to watch somebody like me try to pick
so many questions on that.
You shut up because you don't even like listening to me play. So suck it.
When I
don't pay you. So I guess
we played together one time. I remember last year once. Mm-hmm. That's all I needed. But I can tell you that.
You do the show.
No, but as a long time, you know, I got my guitar lessons from my Catholic school music director, Catholic church music director, and I can't wait to ask Jason a couple of questions about what it takes to go giving the old lessons a go. It's got to be some fun. Let's get us some Jason Jordan in here.
He's been playing since he was six.
Hello.
Well, we're a drinking and eating show, by the way. I meant to tell you that. So.
Oh, good.
Have that. We're
having here. having my morning coffee.
Mm-hmm. Is Chris grumpy today?
Oh, grumpy.
What do you mean today?
Elizabeth Mayo, by the way, so we said something about bathroom earlier in the show, Jason, and Elizabeth is pointing out that she's still having Texas storm bathroom trauma after that big old storm wrecked Texas while Ted Cruz was somewhere else.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
I guess her entire bathroom got destroyed, and there was all kinds of, you know, mold issues and stuff that uncovered and all that. So she had a bathroom terror story, but I don't think she could beat your bathroom terror story.
I was really thinking about Texas. The other day, me and my friend were talking about Teslas. We were talking about electric cars. This is completely off the subject, but
that's okay.
So when they were like off the grid, like no one could charge their cars. Like, so even if they wanted to go somewhere, they couldn't. If you could get out, right?
So ultimately, what Musk has in mind is he owns a battery company as well that you can those big batteries you sell in your house. What he wants you to do is he wants you to have solar panels that hook to his batteries, and then that'll have a Tesla plug just laying around as if that's something everybody has as a Tesla. So you're not entirely wrong, but he's kind of making this like self-contained loop.
Gotcha. I was just kind of coming up thinking about that. I was like, man, that would have been a weird time to have an electric car.
Very not untrue. Not untrue. So Carrie, what do we want to hit first? We have a lot of questions.
I don't even know. I mean, if you want Elizabeth to feel better, he could tell his bathroom horror story.
That was fun, Carrie. I remember you coming in costume. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Halloween costume?
On Halloween on her first lesson. I was like, oh, this girl's going to be fun.
If only she'd practice.
You've had a lot going on, so I have a lot of grace.
That's true. At the beginning of the pandemic, I actually started two lessons a week because I wasn't going to the gym anymore. I wasn't going like anywhere anymore. And so I had a lot more time and I was like really making progress. And then I started hosting some show. So a lot less time to practice. But
a lot less time.
Yes. But I have learned a lot. And Jason helped me pick out the guitar that's back there because the one I had was too big.
Well, so one question to ask about being a guitar instructor is you're like a real musician. And so there's a difference that way that you teach people, you know, way down on the open frets and all that sort of thing. My first set of guitar lessons were all bar chords. And I was like, this is easy. Anybody can play guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'll bar, you know, I was doing E and A bar chords. But you teach Carrie all these chords that are, you know, the real deal down low. So she'll show me your tabs and I'll be like, huh. That's how a real person would play that song.
You know, it's funny. My dad was a musician and growing up, and my mom was a singer. And my dad, in his early years, he played for bass. He was playing a bass guitar, and he was played for Jerry Lee Lewis and Chuck Berry and Merle Haggard. And my dad, he toured. And in the 80s, my mom was a country singer and had a couple songs on the radio and stuff. So at six, I mean, I really had I don't know. I'd never done anything else, you know? So my parents were like, at like three, I started drum lessons. And then at six, dad was like, well, you're going to play guitar. And my dad had a little music store, you know? So he's like, he's teaching lessons and he just throws me in the class or whatever. And I remember I'd go to karate. And after I'd get home from my little karate class, I'd go to my dad's guitar class, you know? And probably about 13 or 14, my dad, they had their band and he's like, you're going to play guitar for the band. And I was like, at that point, I'm at home learning, like, you know, Jimi Hendrix songs and Stevie Ray Vaughan. I'm like, they're like playing straight up old school country music. And I'm like, oh, I don't know any of these songs. So they were getting a lot of blues solos in like these old traditional country songs. And so I had to really like woodshed and learn the songs. So by 16 or 17, I was playing pretty well and had learned all the songs. And I already knew then I was going to move to Nashville. But I started teaching lessons when I was like 15. So Wow. It's always, no matter how, I mean, I toured with bands and I've been going 300 days a year, but I always taught. I would teach either from the road virtually or I would teach, you know, in person here in Mount Juliet at a music store where Carrie started out, Shiloh Music in Mount Juliet. I would teach every Monday because it seemed like, you know, no matter how you were touring, you were usually home on Mondays. And because Nashville, I mean, the country music thing is like weekend warriors. You leave Thursday night and play Friday, Saturday and come home on Sunday. That's just kind of how it always works. You know, they don't, now they do some longer stints, but back, you know, Nashville's traditionally been a Thursday, Friday, Saturday kind of gig town, you know. So
every instructor at Shiloh has been playing since they were like an infant. So one week you had a gig out of town and I had a lesson with someone else. I want to say it was Jules. And I was like, geez, you guys have all been playing since you were really young. He's like, oh no, I just started when I was like 35. I was like, really? And he's like, no.
No.
I was 11. I was like, son of a.
Yeah.
The guy's not even 35. You're like 20 something. And he's like, I am.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I really didn't have many options, you know, to of what I was going to do with a career. I mean, my parents both being in the music business, it was like I was going to do this. And my mom made me make a deal with her. She's like, hey, our local college back home, I'm from Alabama, and it's like community college, and we had this great band director. His name was Rip Reagan. And it was more of a show band than like a jazz band. It was like 50 pieces with horns and two drum sets. And like, it was like, and they had scholarships for roadies, sound guys, lighting guys. And they had a semi truck and they would bring this gear to high schools and use it for recruiting. And they came to my school and I was probably, you know, ninth or 10th grade. And I was like, oh man, this is really, really good. Like they're putting on a concert, you know? And so my mom's like, well, let's say if you go to the school and get a scholarship, then you stay for 2 years. And then you can go do what you want. If you want to move to Nashville, finish school or whatever you want to do. So I remember going over to the school. I was 18. I was senior in high school. And he was like, well, we're really not looking for a guitar player. And I was like, okay. He's like, but we're going to let you audition in case something pops up or whatever. And you go to school here. So I was thinking, well, it's probably going to happen, you know? So I remember I went in, played two songs, and then he's like, he dismissed the band, and I was the only one in there. And he goes, well, do you think it would be okay to skip your graduation? And I was like, why? He goes, well, we're going to Florida and playing this big festival. We'd love to have you there. And my parents were like, nope, you can't do it. But I ended up getting a scholarship. I stayed about a year and a half and did that, but I never went to class. Back to teaching, what happened was in school, in the college, they had no guitar program. And so I started a guitar program and I ended up with 150 students a week. So I couldn't go to class. I was teaching. And I mean, I was teaching from 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. Jeez. So I had no.
You're like a guitar sweatshop.
There was no time to go to English. And I was making as much as the teachers were making. Because I was faculty at that point, you know.
Now so, I feel like we need to hear you play, Jason.
Well, it was funny though. I would just teach lessons, and the only class I'd go to was band, and I'd go to the band rehearsal and come back to the teaching. I had my own room, and you know, I was like, so I stayed a year and a half, and I was like, I'm moving to Nashville. I mean, I'm good on this, you know. So there you go. There's my story of how I got to Nashville. So I moved to Nashville at 19. And went on the road at 20, and now I'm 46, and I toured all the way until last year, until COVID.
Well, so I have a question about that. We've had another working musician on. He's a friend of mine, Todd Kearns, who most commonly plays with Slash. He's Slash's bass player, but he plays guitar in this band, and he plays for Kiss on their cruise. You know, he's a working guy.
Yeah,
out of Vegas, which is the other Nashville, really, for working musicians.
Sure. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about that for a second. Maybe if you want to play a little while you talk about it, tell us a little bit about the difference between, you know, young pup you coming to Nashville in your early 20s and all that, and what it was like after a few years on the road in the vans.
You know, Nashville, the city itself has changed so much. When I came to Nashville, there was no Broadway, which is like our famous street where all the, I think there's, somebody told me the other day, there's 150 stages going at one time every day. And that's insane, you know, in this little, you know, 5-block area. But that, none of that was happening. There were like 3 bars downtown, and like Broadway was scary. Like, and you didn't want to go down there. I mean, there were, you know, homeless people laying on the streets, and it was like a really different town, city than it is now. And so in 96, when I moved to town, I knew like 2 people, and they let me start subbing at Opryland when Opry Mills was there, now the mall, but it used to be a theme park, and it was a country music theme park. So I started playing there when I was 19. I just moved to Nashville, so I did that for a couple of years, and then in 97 they decided to close the park. And being young, and I moved here, and I was making about $1,000 a day when I started working there. And I mean, I'm 19. I'm like, well, man, I used to, this town's easy. I'm like, this is nothing, you know? Well, then the park decides to close in 97 and they're going to build a shopping mall. And I'm like, uh-oh, now what? So hence the van stuff. So I started playing with this guy named Rich McCready. That was my first gig. And we were vanning it all over the United States. But probably a year into that gig, I ended up landing a gig with a guy named Michael Peterson. And Michael had two number one songs, so it kind of was pretty quick for me, to be honest. I've been very blessed here, and I never had a lack of work either, which is really good. And
you toured in Canada too, I feel like, didn't you, with the artist up in Canada?
That was a couple years in, and that was about 2000 probably when I did that. But I was with Michael for quite a few years and actually got to do like some Garth Brooks, you know, we were opening for Garth Brooks and got to do some really cool stuff. And
wow,
still not even 21 probably at that time, you know. And then honestly, it never really stopped. I was just kind of going from gig to gig. I always make a joke that the first day you start a gig, you're looking for the next one, you know, because country music's just like, it just keeps, you know, the artist's careers just go up and down so fast. And I mean, if you can be with someone 5 years, you've had a really long gig, because they don't last like that anymore. You know, things are just kind of disposable music. I hate to use that term, but that's kind of what it is these days. It's like, it's made to be on the radio right now and then forgotten about in a month, you know?
Well, I mean, I think everybody's at this point seen that YouTube video where that guy lines all up on the Pro Tools or whatever, every single country song, and it's every song. And you go, oh my gosh. You know, I've been lied to. I imagine the average country fan.
The snaps are in the same spot and the hand claps. Yeah, I know that video.
Oh, and that's awful.
That's true. I probably played on some of those songs.
Yes, you probably did. Well, so then I was going to ask you, early country is the best country. We can all agree on that. You know, good Hank Sr., you know.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. I'm a sort of Hank Sr. to Hank the Third. We could skip Junior. It's okay.
Yeah.
So I want to know two questions that kind of go together. Maybe it'll convince you to play a song for us. What's like an early, like kind of barnstormer of a song you'd play and the crowd would lose their mind in any place you played it? And then I had a question of what was your most star-like moment where you really felt for that just a second? This must be what Garth feels like.
I don't know on the song thing. I mean, yeah, I'm from Alabama. You can't get away from Sweet Home Alabama. I hate to say that, but that's like but when I was back home, that was always a staple. But like as a kid growing up, I mean, it was like Johnny B. Goode was kind of always my thing. You know, it's kind of like the Back to the Future stuff. You know, I always felt like that. But the biggest moment, the two really ones that stand out, like touring. I was doing the Tim McGraw tour, and growing up in Alabama, our closest big venue, I'm from a really small town called Piedmont, Alabama, and the population's like 4,000. And from my hometown, a lot of guys have done some pretty cool things. I have one friend's a fashion designer in Chicago, and he's done really well and designed stuff on the Grammys and the Oscars and done really well, but from our little hometown, from our little high school class. But on the Tim McGraw tour, the opening date was in Birmingham, which was where I saw every concert growing up at Oak Mountain Amphitheater. I saw everyone there. I saw Vince Gill. I saw the Eagles. I saw Van Halen. Everyone. I saw them on that stage, and that tour kicked off on that, and we got to rehearse there for 2 days. So it was cool. It was kind of like it was kind of like my venue. I got to play at it. That was a big moment. And then another one was I did the Jake Owen tour, and we were in Chicago at the House of Blues, and we did 3 sold out nights, and you could not have put another person in that place. And that was, and it's like 3 or 4 stories tall.
Right. It's vertical.
It's just straight up. And that was probably the most rock star moment I've ever felt in my life. When I walked out, started that show, and it was like, wow, you couldn't even hear what you were playing. You know, it was just amazing. Not the biggest crowd, but the most enthusiastic, and just being sold out every night. That one, you know, that's one of those gigs where it couldn't last long enough. Other than some of them, you're like, when will this ever be over? You know,
stand by your man in a metal cage while they're throwing beers at you.
Yeah, the Blues Brothers. Yeah, no doubt.
So Elizabeth loves Sweet Home Alabama.
Hey, and funny enough about the Blues Brothers, Steve Cropper. I used to be in Steve Cropper's backing band here in Nashville. So
wow.
A lot, you know.
Been with everybody.
He was the guitar player, you know, in the Blues Brothers. And
he is. So Jason is like to music what you are to social media.
Six degrees of separation, guy.
You know everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that guy's wrote everything, too. Sitting on Dock of the Bay, he wrote all those classic songs. Soul Man and all that, you know?
Oh, I think about that. Yeah, you got to bust us out a little something. You got to remember, it's a morning show. It's got to be fast. Don't make us sleep.
So that's kind of like the stylistically, which that's what's gotten me through COVID, thank the Lord, is that I've been known for this style called chicken picking. And like you were asking about the songs earlier, that was like one of the first things I learned was like Jerry Reed's one of my heroes, and he has a song called The Claw.
That's a cool guitar. That's a cool guitar too.
Oh yeah, this is a guy in Michigan, Jeff Neville. He builds these. I got the sparkle just because I want it, but he builds these really cool guitars. But yeah, Jerry Reed was one of my biggest influences growing up. That was one of his songs called "Claw." So, but transitioning from the touring to COVID, like we were going to talk about, I've always played. Once I really got into the guitar, I figured out this like hybrid picking. So. And Carrie, we talk about this all the time because I have fake nails. I go get acrylics and playing this style. And I didn't know anything different. I'm not like Eddie Van Halen where he's like super fast with the pick. Right. So I had to figure out this, you know, I didn't really even know it was a thing. And I just started like I was taking guitar lessons. I'll never forget it. And my teacher was like, send me home with a thumb pick, playing all these like Chet Atkins style songs. And I would go home and struggle through these things with the thumb pick, and then I would get my flat pick and I would go back and struggle through the lesson every week. And he was like, he asked me one day, he goes, can you play this stuff with a flat pick? And I was like, oh yeah. And I did it. And he goes, wow, I've never seen anybody do that. And I was like, yeah, this kind of makes more sense to me, and started doing this. And then when I came to Nashville, I didn't know it was like a hybrid playing. It was like a big thing. Like everybody was learning to do this at the time, but I just kind of did it because it felt comfortable to me. And then getting into the chicken picking things, which is all the kind of stuff I was playing. And I started posting these YouTube videos and never really thought that much about it. And I just randomly every year put a couple videos. Not anything.
That's how I found you.
Yeah.
I needed an instructor.
Nothing serious. So I would just be like noodling around, get a new guitar, and I'd put a little video up about it or whatever. And then, I don't have that many followers, but it was like during the COVID times, I started posting like, hey, if any of these people want to take lessons, then I'm going to do lessons because I'm not touring, you know? So, that's really what got me through it. And there were some weeks where I had 75 people a week, you know? The worst week was ever. It was the first week of when things shut down, I guess the third week of March. And, I had like 18 people. That was like the worst week ever. Then after that, it was like, you know, 60, 70 a week. And really, man, it got me through this time. You know, I'm very thankful that I had goofed around and put a few YouTube videos up, you know.
Did anybody else double down like me? Like, I can't go anywhere.
You know, I've got a couple people, too, that have started and they still taking. And like I've got some people from a guy from Seattle and a couple from California and Texas and. Oh man, I was trying to think New York and Maine. I've got a guy from Maine. I mean, it's like, and they've stuck with me the whole year, you know? So, been very fortunate with that. So
here's a fun fact. I found my tattoo artist because of you, because of your ink.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I was like, I don't trust anybody enough to have him do tattoos. And then I saw yours and was like, whose is yours?
Yeah.
Jason, yeah. You mentioned really quick. I want to go back to something. You mentioned really quick. You were saying something about your style and the difference with the acrylics and all that. You kind of whipped really quick through Eddie Van Halen. So people who don't play guitar don't know that Eddie had, you know, he pretty much invented that whole fingerboarding concept to the level that he did it. Sure. But that's what you're doing too, just on a different on the other side of that same equation. You're saying I could throw a lot more notes in if you let me go at it this way.
Exactly.
Than that way. That's the deal.
Yeah. I'm not like, for technique wise, I'm not like a fast shredder with the pick where Eddie had all this really fast playing like that. I'm more right. doing it with, like, you know, I can hold a chord and play. Playing more notes that way without having to worry about moving the pick so fast. I figure I have three picks that way.
Right. And you likened it to a little bit like playing banjo and guitar at the same time in a way. Exactly. Yeah, that's how banjo gets done.
Because you can play all the banjo sounds. Banjo kind of sounding stuff, you know?
Make so when I get to do a new song, he'll be like, oh, hey, here's what you do. Do-do-do-do-do-do. And I'm like, uh-huh. Slow it way
I'll send you slowing down the videos of everything.
I do. Tell me what to do.
The thing, so Guitar Stores, the joke is No Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
With guitar instruction, my instructor, like I said, ran. He was like the Catholic school music guy, and one of the things he did was he just said, "What do you want to play?" And I'm not even thinking Catholic school. I was like, "I like that Smoking in the Boys Room song that Motley Crue covered," yeah. And he's like, "Okay, cool." And so we played that, and then we played like just awful songs. We played like 80s pop rock songs, and he was just like, "Okay, buddy," and that's how he got started. So you start from where people like it, but are there certain songs when they ask you to play them, you just wince your face off and smile politely?
I think my new most hated song is that Seven Nation Army.
That's like, nothing to the song.
And every kid comes in and wants to learn it, and I'm like, well, that's going to take about 1 minute of the lesson.
Exactly. So, let me show you how to play it with your nose.
So now what are we going to do for the next 39 minutes? I mean, 29 minutes, you know? It's like, but, you know, it's fine. It's fine. I do take a different approach, I think, to teaching, too, because it's funny. I have a lot of professionals since I've been post, you know, since the YouTube thing and all that. So, like, a lot of guys I teach are like, I've made a joke once. This is no joke. This really did happen, but it's kind of a funny moment for me is I played a festival, and I was in the opening band. I was playing with a brand new artist, and the festival was like, I don't want to name the bands because they're like really famous bands, but there were like five bands, and I was in the band playing at like 1 p.m, but I had taught every guitar player in all of the other bands. And I was, some of them I was currently teaching, and the headliner I was currently teaching, and those guys are one of the biggest selling artists of all time, but I was currently teaching him lessons, and I just thought, that's kind of surreal. We're catering, and there's a whole table of guitar players, and I've taught them all, you know? That's not uncommon. I get a lot of guys that call me and they're like, hey, I got this new gig. Can you help me learn these songs? You know, that
makes sense. Like a coach.
So I'll kind of learn the songs with them, and then they'll come and take lessons, and we'll kind of go through the songs together. And it's more than just songs. It's dialing up the sounds, the tones, and the right amps and the right guitar, or, you know, down to where the pickup selector needs to be. Is it a bassy sound, or what are you going for? You know, so. So I do a lot of that stuff too. So,
Dave Delaney had a Nashville question. He says, "Do you have a secret way we can access Roberts without being hit by a COVID-y pedal tavern or mobile hot tub on Lower Broad?"
Hey, you know, that's funny. I've always like hated everything. I've hated those like stupid buses with the girls dancing on them. We have a hot tub truck. If no one's ever been to Nashville, like, we have a truck that's a school bus, and it's like hollowed out in the back, and it has hot tubs in it, and people are in bathing suits in the middle of winter in this hot tub truck. And I always these stupid pedal tires, I've hated all that stuff, but after
you're so get off my lawn with
check
all that.
This out though, but after a year of not being down here, every time I see one I'm like, thank god that thing is back, you know? I mean, because I was sweating it. I mean, I thought, man, is it going to be able to come back? I didn't know if those businesses would survive or like the tourists would come back, but thankfully they have, you know. And so there is no secret to getting around them other than go on a Monday or a Tuesday or something in the, you know, in the daytime. But it's even busy again during the week, thank goodness. I mean, I'm playing tonight, so I hope it's busy.
Well, you've already had COVID and you're vaccinated. So for you, that's cool. But I'm looking at it from the suburbs like, oh, man, I'm going downtown. It looks like the pandemic never happened.
Well, I was telling Carrie this the other day. There's one club I play at, and it's very much by the rules. And that gig, though, I mean, you play a song and you're just literally like rocking out and the song's over and no one is really claps or anything because they're at tables and they're seated. And that gig's 4 hours and it seems like it takes 12 to get over with. And then I played another club this week that's more loose on the rules because now Nashville's done away with the mask in the outdoor settings. And it's up to the venue if they want to make you wear a mask or not. So I played another one, no mask, people could dance. That gig seemed like it took about an hour, and it was 4 hours because the energy level was so high. You know, it's you really forget how much the crowd is dependent on how good the gig goes for us and for them. You know,
you don't have to tell us, Jason. We at the Backpack Show very much appreciate the crowd.
Yeah, we like the audience.
Yeah, the audience participation is a very big deal.
Oh, catch you later, Elizabeth. See you. And, so when you were talking about that, I was thinking about one of my favorite comedians is happens to be a Nashville area boy, Nate Bargatze. I think he's out in Mount Juliet, and he says in his recent gig, he did it outdoors, and you don't tell that for a minute or two because it's like a really nice place like Vegas or somewhere like that. So Nate, yes to that, Carrie. Nate says, you know, it's a little bit weird being outdoors. Next thing you know, you hear helicopter noise and stuff like that. He goes, I feel like my next gig is going to be at LAX. He said for comics, it's been terrible. He did a drive-in movie.
Yeah, the drive-in theater. Yeah.
He said it was terrible. So, hi, Rage Talk. So we want to switch 90 degrees. We want to get out of guitars and into shoes because it turns out.
Are you saying that you're asking a question from nowhere?
And this question comes from inside the big yard at Folsom County Prison.
Indeed, I am. You're a sneakerhead, which that doesn't really line up with, you know, guitar since age six music instructor, but like the kicks.
It does too. So
set me straight.
Does too.
No, there's a reason behind this. And it's like, it's very common in the music because I know a lot of dudes that are, but it really started. Well, my last name's Jordan for one. So it started there, but I wanted to wear shoes. Like if I did a tour and
those are cute. Like
70 dates, I wanted to wear a different pair of shoes on every gig. That's where it all started from. And then once I guess it was like 2018, 19, I had like 190 pairs of sneakers. And I just thought, I'm like, man, I have no place to put all these things. So I didn't even really ever think about selling any sneakers. And then I started noticing, I'm like, whoa, some of these sneakers that I bought for $75 are worth like a grand. So in 2019, I started kind of messing around with this guy and buying and selling sneakers. And then, and I still keep stuff too, but during COVID, I was like, oh man, I need a little side hustle. And so I started doing it and hitting, once it went to all online, it was just raffles. So I'm like, oh man, I'll start entering all these raffles. And as you can see from my Instagram, I've kind of gotten lucky quite a few times. I was figuring it up yesterday. I had 74 pairs this year so far, and I haven't been doing it like last year because I bet last year I probably sold 400, 500 pairs of shoes.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, logistically, like I can't even think about that.
My wife hates it. Because I don't have anything now, but they were like piled up like everywhere in my house, you know, so. My guitar obsession. Well, when I was on the road, there was a time where I had like 78 guitars too. So I was, I sold all those and bought my wife a Toyota Camry. So,
Lord, you have a fair few guitars now, though. It's not like you're totally without.
I try to keep it to a dozen.
Are they all behind you?
Some are. I got a bunch. I got stuff out. I've been doing a bunch of recording sessions, so there's some stuff's packed away. But I don't keep anything. I don't keep too many. I try to keep a dozen, and it has to be like stuff that really I'm going to use and matters to me. For the guitar.
Well, that's the thing, is if you're only keeping 12, you can't keep a whole lot of old timeies.
This is like the mecca right here for me. This is a 1964 Gibson ES-335, and my dad bought this new in 1965. He bought it, and it's kind of the Chuck Berry guitar, you know. And dad loved Chuck Berry. This was a good one. I could do every gig for the rest of my life on this one. So, as far as guitars, this is the mecca for me. So.
That's a full body guitar too. It doesn't need a whole lot of anything to amp it up or, you know.
No, man, it's money. It doesn't matter. You could plug it into a tin can and it'd sound like $1 million.
Coach Woodard says, what? Sneakers? No cowboy boots?
Yeah, no cowboy boots. It's all about these right here.
Nashville's a place like that now though too, isn't it? It's like a lot Jack White and a lot, you know, kind of newer music types and stuff like that.
It's funny. There's actually a sneaker store on Broadway now, like a full on, like, you know, resale shop with thousands of pairs of sneakers, like right on Broadway. And when he started opening, I was like, man, this guy's going to have to sell a lot of stuff to pay this rent, you know? And I went the other day and he's like, he cannot keep stuff in there. I mean, he just can't keep it in there. So, I mean,
the world is changing.
Nashville is definitely, it's a big city. It's all grown up now.
Well,
cowboy boots. Cowboy means tourist, so
usually means tourist. I could see that though. You can't, you know, all hat no cattle rolling up into Nashville. It's got to be pretty common.
But Carrie had asked about some sneakers, so this is so far. This has been the most expensive Jordan of the year.
Really?
Yeah, this is the most sought after one so far. There's one coming this weekend. It's probably going to trump it, but this has been the hardest one to get. So
why?
I don't know. It's just a color. It's like the UNC colorway, you know, the Air Jordan thing. So
got it.
I got lucky on these. I ended up getting like three or four pairs. So I actually kept one. I don't keep many for myself. And this is kind of a weird one that like got all crazy. It's an Air Max 90. It's called a Bacon colorway. this one's kind of. I don't really know. If this one went nuts, but these things came out like $100 and they went up to like $580. So, not sure.
Grief. Even if I could afford that, I wouldn't do it. Just on principle.
And these are my son's obsessions, are Yeezys. My son has like 11 pairs of Yeezys. So, but these are like Kanye's thing, you know.
You got to mow a lot of lawns to have 11 Yeezys there, Jason Jordan.
Hey, my boy stays busy. And then these are like not crazy expensive, but these are like my fun wearing ones I've been wearing. I got these for summer. These are Air Jordans too. These are called Paris Saint Germains, but. These are good. These are fun ones.
He's a shoe horse.
Wait. You said these are my fun ones for summer. Does that mean you wear those out to a barbecue or something like that? You would not.
No, just to gigs, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm rocking these.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, fresh cut grass. There's no way you're pushing those things through some lawns.
No. Okay. I just really wear them to gigs or whatever, you know? So.
Well, when you're on stage, you always pick them out by the shoes.
That's right. It's funny how many people will really notice that and ask about them. They're like, oh, man, where are those sneakers, you know?
Well, because your feet are head level to the crowd.
Yeah.
Well, we're at a spot in our show where I got to do this.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
Carrie, I love that idea. I think that is an actual clever idea. So I'm going to give our person of the day to Dave Delaney, who showed up all the way from Nashville himself. It was a toss-up, him and John Michael Morgan. John's got the much more attractive beard, but Dave has two things going for him. He's a Tennessee gentleman, but he's also by way of Canada. So how can you get a more loving
person? Three
things.
He's a ginger.
Also true. That was going to be a negative in my book. I was going to take a few points out for that. But
you can see why I would appreciate that.
Yeah, I can see why we do that. So we ask every single guest who comes on the show, although I have a sneaking suspicion, we ask every single guest on this show one question the same, which is what goes in your backpack? Now, this could be something physical, like a tuner, and it could be something metaphorical, like love for the old guys. It's anything you want to put in it. Carrie, what's a great example of something physical someone could put in a backpack?
Extra set of teeth.
An extra set of teeth. You never know when you need them. How about something metaphorical you could throw in a backpack?
Kindness.
That's a good one. Kindness is a great, great one. Jason Jordan, tell us a little bit about what should go in your backpack, either something physical or metaphorical.
I would say as a musician, you should never play a gig and not have an extra set of strings.
Mm. What are you rocking for strings these days? What do you recommend?
I play Elixirs.
Good brand.
No endorsement. I just like them. I really went to Elixirs because I hate strings. I hate changing strings. So I would literally, even touring, I would leave these on for like 5-6 months at a time. I have carried.
Wow.
You change them like once a year. I mean, I just really don't like to change strings, and I'll play them till they just break. You know.
And they stay bright and everything all that time.
They kind of go on. They're not as bright as a normal string, but I also like, because how they're coated, they don't get a lot of the squeaking when you're, I do a lot of recording sessions, and I don't like, especially on acoustic, I don't like that squeaking, you know, and they, since they're coated, it fills in the winding. So you don't get a lot of the squeak, you know? So,
and things we learn on the backpack show.
And, I don't really know like what the word is for it, but I'll say this, as far as like, I'll share anything with anyone, I guess, as far as my like metaphorical thing, almost like mentorship, I guess. I will show anyone. I'm not a guitar player as far as like, I don't like the guitar player ego side of things, which that has always been kind of, I guess it goes with every music thing, but it seems more prevalent even in guitar players, that if you're in a room full of guitar players, you're not going to impress anyone because they could all do it better, or they don't like your tone, or they don't like the color of your shirt or whatever. And I'm not that guy. I don't care one thing about any of that. If there's a better guitar player in the room, I'll be the first one to tell you, hey, that guy's great. You should check him out. I don't care. And if anybody wants to know any lick I play or any amp, I've always been that guy too. Like if the opening band wanted to come up and ask me about my equipment, he can play it. I would love to share anything, because I feel like when we're all dead and gone, what are we going to do with it? I mean, right. I can't take it with me. I mean, no one's going to bury me with this guitar. I would be silly. Give it to somebody else. I mean, I don't care, you know, but I mean, as far as knowledge, I would rather share it. And that's one thing I've done with the teaching. I posted a video. I have a Patreon as well. And I posted a video on there, and I was like, secret licks. And like one of the guys reached out and he goes, what do you mean secret licks? I go, these are the licks that no one knows that I use all the time. And he's like, oh, you're going to give those away? I go, what am I going to do? It doesn't matter. I mean, what am I going to do with them? You know, I'm not going to live forever. I'd rather the licks live on than and the knowledge live on than the, me just to hoard the stuff, you know?
That is a very profound statement. I was in a lot of really bad metal bands growing up, a lot of garage bands. And we used to make a joke all the time about when we'd play out at little clubs and little bars, we'd say spot the guitarist, because at every place you ever went, there was a guitarist.
Oh, yeah.
Arms folded, intensely staring at your work.
Exactly. You know? It's like a music critic, you know, it's like he's not going to like anything, you know.
I know how to fingerboard better than you. You know how to everything better than me. I'm in this band because I like songs. I don't know.
Well, this is one thing I'm very curious about in Nashville, because during like the quarantine, a lot of folks moved away. I mean, it was pretty wild. Like, you know, looking at like your Facebook feed or whatever, there were like, I mean, I probably had, you know, 5-6 dudes a day moving away, like moving back home and not coming back and starting different careers. So I have a couple of dudes that I mentor, and they're working a lot. And I told them, I go, if you can hang through this thing, when it comes back, you're going to have a great gig, because there's not, the competition is, the pool is going less and less. And man, I'm getting more calls than I've gotten in years, because there's not that many dudes now, you know, that are on the level. A lot of the great guys moved away, you know, so it's going to propel a lot of these new young kids that have been able to grind it out, you know, and sustain through that year, you know.
So normally when we end the show, we go out with some metal music, and I thought maybe you could play us out, you know, throw a little sound on there, maybe give us a little walking kind of bluesy something or other and kick us out or whatever comes to mind. You might be inspired after sitting with us for a bit.
We can do something bluesy. Thank you.